Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink Indy. Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are looking at local food through the lens of politics as we explore an Indiana farm's efforts to sell their pastured poultry to restaurants. We'll talk about a bill currently under consideration in the Indiana legislature that concerns the Hawkins family farm in North Manchester, Indiana. We'll hear from Jeff Hawkins and his son Zach about their efforts to sell to restaurants and hashtag keep chicken on the menu. We'll also hear from Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant Indianapolis about the importance of local food and about a chef's role in bringing the issue to the public's attention. And we'll also talk with farmer Greg Gunthorpe of Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange, Indiana, whose pastured meat and poultry is popular with chefs around the Midwest, and about what he is doing to not only keep chicken on the menu, but also to help ensure a future for sustainable farming. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we find ourselves at the intersection of food and politics. It's not a place that's always comfortable to be. I know that some of us don't necessarily want to get involved in politics, but local food is very much a political issue, one that affects farmers as well as chefs and consumers. Today's show focuses on one bill currently under consideration in the Indiana legislature. House Bill 1267, as it reads now, would keep small meat and poultry farmers from selling their products to restaurants. The bill would eliminate an exemption that currently provides a state inspection process that fits small-scale farming. In fact, just one farm in Indiana currently operates under this exemption. The father-son team of Jeff and Zach Hawkins operate the Hawkins Family Farm in North Manchester, Indiana. And because of an exemption that applies to small farms that process fewer than 20,000 birds a year, they're allowed to sell to Indiana restaurants, to chefs that prize their pasture-raised chicken. Those backing the bill present it as a food safety issue. But the bill has been characterized by the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, for example, as an effort to protect the market for big ag, a bill that threatens the growing farm-to-fork movement, one that could diminish the appeal of farming for a new generation of Hoosiers committed to smaller and safer farming methods. We talked this week with Jeff and Zach Hawkins about their farm and their efforts to find a way to continue to raise and process chickens on their small family farm. Zach Hawkins explains the history of the Hawkins family farm.
I'm the fourth generation on this farm. My great-grandparents purchased it in 1957. That was toward the end of their lives. They had been farming on leased land up until that point, saving their money, hoping to buy their own farm. Their parents and grandparents had been farming in the southern part of our county before that. So our family has been in the county for six generations. It's sandy loam soil. It's a very nice farm, so we benefit from what they did back then and take that pretty seriously as we farm. How it looks now is it's kind of a patchwork farm in some ways. There are gardens. We have a vegetable CSA. We raise hogs. We raise cattle. We raise poultry, chickens, and turkeys. We have pasture. We have a small woodland. We're just starting to get into some grain crops for animal feed. So it's a pretty diverse place, and it's a lively place. There's always something making noise or something going wrong. And we have a lot of people coming from through the farm, too, whether it's interns or CSA members or pizza people coming to have pizza on Friday. So it's a lively and colorful place.
How do you get to the point of wanting to diversify and grow? You know, it hasn't been a good time over the last, several decades for the family farm.
Yeah, some of that I think Zach named nicely in that there's a generational component to that. You know, Grandpa had 7 fields on a 99-acre farm. You wouldn't see that today much. You know, it'd be one field. And it mattered how all those components, those enterprises, fit together in terms of what made for health in nature. And so Zach and I, one of our highest values is to farm in such a way that it's congruent with the health that nature provides and brings. And that's where what we learn. We try to step out of the way rather than impose something on nature. So I'd say, you know, one answer to wanting to do it really, the chief answer for us, it really is our first question is, you know, what is creation demanding here? And how do we mimic that, or how do we partner, you know, with that? That's really our first question. The second one then, of course, is that health has creational or environmental component. It has kind of a social component as well, the health of our family, our neighborhood, our you know, our region, and then it also has an economic component. How do you stay in business? And Zach came back to the farm in 2013 full-time, and the question that was raised then is, you know, how do we set up this farm that was basically a break-even farm in such a way that at least one family, if not two families, can make a living at it. And that required dramatic expansion in a number of different areas. But again, not expanding for the sake of how do we make more money, but how do we expand in a way that continues to improve the health of this farm, and that includes economic.
When you decided to come back to the farm full-time, what did you hope it could be?
Yeah. Well, I actually have this crazy idea that we're not doing right now, but it kind of maybe gives you a sense of where we're headed. And there are a few farms doing this in the country. It's called a full diet CSA, where they're producing the vegetables, the meat, the dairy, the grains, everything that most of what a family might eat. And so that we can grow in Indiana. And so that excites me, and that sort of guides some of the decisions we make about how we choose what to grow and then how we grow as a farm. So that means growing in a lot of small arenas. So, like, practically that's meant putting more land in gardens because we increased the number of CSA customers. That did mean growing our flock of chickens, but then also asking ourselves, well, what demands does that make on the pasture? What demands does that make on us in terms of infrastructure like processing and having freezer space and that sort of thing? We're now starting to breed hogs, you know, so that also has come out of this growth. Well, you know, people like pork, we do too, but we were having trouble kind of purchasing feeders from other farms, so that means we have to figure out how to produce them ourselves.
It also means that we're in the curious position of being extremely countercultural. You know, neighbors around us are tearing fences out, we're putting fences in. Neighbors around us are ripping trees out, you know, we're planting trees. And so it really is this contrary way of farming, in a sense, which is kind of fun. but it gives us this this wide, very appealing permission to sort of ask, what if, you know, what if we established a food forest, which is a concept of more permanent, you know, kind of things that you're growing that people can harvest things from, and what if, which is really, I think, appealing to both of us. You know, we enjoy challenges, we enjoy being creative and finding creative solutions, and we are at the front edge, I think, of a fairly long journey to put a number of things in place so that this farm just continues to grow in terms of health. We're growing soil, you know, in a sense, not just plants.
And one of the things that I think Dad and I both find very satisfying is we get to look to the past. We get to ask, okay, what would Grandma and Grandpa have done in this situation? What did they do? They were sticklers for soil health. They didn't want to lose any of that good soil that they had just purchased. And so we feel the same. When we were just talking with a farmer friend the other day about crop rotations and, you know, how did they used to do it. But we also get to look to the future. We have so much on the farm that would just floor my great-grandparents, right. You know, like unheated hoop houses and, you know, an Italian-made two-wheeled walking tractor and all sorts of – I think they'd be excited about it. But this isn't just an attempt to go back and do things the way they were. It's not nostalgia. It's we get to learn from the past and we get to take everything we have today and move forward toward what we hope is a really healthy, vibrant agriculture.
How does all that fit in with processing poultry on the farm? Because that is the issue that you're facing right now. So tell me a little bit about that aspect.
So poultry processing on the farm is one among many tasks that is done on a farm like this. Because, you know, on a given Saturday on our farm at the height of the growing season, yes, we do have folks that are putting their energy into processing chickens, but there are also weeds to pull and animals to feed and plants to get started and the cattle to move and all these things. So it's a component of a larger picture, but it's an important one because before we were processing on the farm, we were driving 120 miles round trip twice a week to take birds to a state-inspected facility, which also included crating up the birds the night before in the heat of the day, which is stressful on the birds and the farmers. The trip was stressful on the birds. They sat outside for, you know, probably up to, 8 to 12 hours overnight, which can have real effects on the quality of the final product. There's biosecurity questions. So processing on the farm freed us up to do all of these other things better and then to actually to process better. The folks at the state-inspected facility did a good job. But we have ultimate control now that we're able to do it ourselves. And our name is the one that's on those birds when it goes to restaurants and goes to people's homes. And so that's important to us.
Yeah, I mean, just to give a quick little story with that, on one of the given Saturdays this past summer, we processed chickens and we were cleaning gizzards, and we noticed that there wasn't a lot of grit in the gizzards, and we often supply supplemental grit. You know, it varies. But when we notice that, it's like, oh, boy, these birds are not, you know, they don't have enough grit. Well, if we'd taken them somewhere, they would have cleaned those gizzards. We would have never seen it. We would have never known it. We couldn't have made an adjustment. And so that's a little story, but it's, you know, every little thing we can observe. We see every bird, every part of every bird, and then put our name on it. And that's recognized by the many of the better restaurants in the state because they want our birds. They know they're just really good.
And this is all kind of a way of saying, in order to do this kind of farming, we think you have to be a generalist. This is a time of specialization, segmentation in many industries, and farming is certainly one of them. But we don't brood and hatch birds on the farm. They come as day-olds from a hatchery. But after that, we oversee every day of the lives of those birds. And we think that's the best way.
We've been talking with Jeff and Zach Hawkins of the Hawkins Family Farm about House Bill 1267 in the Indiana Legislature. Stay with us for more on the issue here on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio today talking about a bill currently in the Indiana legislature that would affect small farmers and meat and poultry processors in Indiana. Specifically, it would affect one Indiana farm that currently sells its pasture-raised poultry to a handful of Indiana restaurants. The Hawkins Family Farm in North Manchester, Indiana, raises about 4,000 chickens a year and processes them on the farm in their state-inspected processing facility. Because of their small scale, they qualify for an exemption to inspection rules governing larger producers. House Bill 1267, currently under consideration in the Indiana legislature, would eliminate the exception that allows the Hawkins Family Farm to sell to Indiana restaurants. The father-son team of Jeff and Zach Hawkins find themselves in the middle of a debate about the appropriate level of government regulation and inspection for a small Indiana farm. Jeff Hawkins explains how their involvement came about, and his son Zach tells us more about their vision for sustainable agriculture in Indiana and about the hashtag Keep Chicken on the Menu campaign.
We recognized that we wanted to expand in the chicken enterprise, that processing would be part of that. We were grateful when in 2014 our state senator, Jim Banks, sponsored legislation that was passed that seemed to open up some of what farms were able to do with the chickens they had raised. They could process them on the farm, a small batch, and then could sell them to farmers markets, roadside stands, and then in that it's called Section 29. In Section 29, it also said through delivery. And so we raised the question when that law went into effect July 1st. We raised the question, does through delivery mean to restaurants? We asked the Board of Animal Health. Though the law was so new, they were still sorting that out. But they did point us to the federal law, which Indiana adopted as its own, that allowed farms, mid-sized is what they're sometimes called, to raise their own birds and process their own birds, nobody others, and no other birds, no one else's, provide them within state lines in a facility that is approved and inspected twice and is regulated in other ways, that yes, indeed, we could sell to restaurants. And that's about 30% of our poultry business. And so that encouraged us then to take further steps to invest in a facility and in equipment and so forth. We sought the grant of exemption and received it from the Board of Animal Health and thought we were ready to process birds and sell them to restaurants.
Under this federal exemption correct. That has been in place for a number of years.
Yeah, it's been since 1968. Indiana adopted it shortly thereafter as its own law. And so, yeah, we and the Board of Animal Health, to their credit, was helpful in steering us and guiding us in this, and everyone was quite happy. We began to process birds in June of 2015, and restaurants bought those birds and liked them, you know, quite a bit. It was an Indiana success story. The restaurants were happy. Our birds are fairly unique, and we were happy because we had good control over them. It was fitting into our plan nicely, and so things were going quite smoothly.
It does seem to be like this was a federal exemption designed to encourage small-scale farms.
It was doing what it was supposed to do. It seemed like, you know, we'd follow the rules, and then here was the marvelous benefit that let us be who we were as this small farm, as Zach said, as people who get to farm most of the time who happen also for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday morning to process their own birds. You know, it's a small component. Designed, it was scale appropriate, and it was really working. It really was a success story. And so we testified to that degree on August 25th at an interim study committee meeting for agriculture with Senator Gene Lysing as the chair and told the success story. But apparently there was a disagreement in opinion, for we were told after we testified that it was claimed at least that what we were doing was illegal.
And yet you have the exemption. You had... Yeah. Gone through a considerable amount of time to make sure that you followed the rules and you got this federal exemption to be able to process a small amount of poultry on the farm.
Right. Yeah, it lets us do up to 20,000 a year, which seems like a lot, but it's 356 birds a week or something like that. So we really do know, you know, most if not all the people that eat our chicken. We do about 4,000 a year. So yes, we had gone through the process, thought we were on solid ground. There was a different law applied to our circumstance that it turns out was misapplied. And the State Department of Health became involved then and issued a cease and desist letter and used this misapplied law and said, you're violating this law. We disagreed. We said, no, that law doesn't apply to us. You know, we're under this grant of exemption. But from there, then, for 11 weeks, we lived under a cease and desist order and we're not allowed to sell to restaurants.
But that turned out to be inappropriately applied.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Thankfully, the state attorney general was finally called in to issue an opinion, and the opinion very clearly said that we were complying with the law when we sold to restaurants, and that restaurants were complying to the law when they purchased our chicken. So that law, or that cease and desist order, was lifted in November. However, during that time, then the interim study committee formulated a proposal for a bill that changed the Indiana code to restrict, to make more restrictive the federal law in Indiana, and to say that farms living under the grant of exemption, such as ours, and that restaurants were not allowed to, we were not allowed to sell our poultry to restaurants, and they were not allowed to buy it. So that's currently in the legislature.
So that is up for consideration in the legislature right now. What is the problem that this legislation is trying to address?
The argument that we hear the most is a food safety argument. The exemption that we have is an exemption from on-site inspection. So we don't have an inspector there, yes, when we're slaughtering the birds to perform what's essentially a visual inspection.
So they look at the birds before they're slaughtered, mm-hmm. and after they're slaughtered.
Yes. Yeah, the antemortem, the before slaughter, is discretionary. So when that's done, it may be done in batches, if it's done at all. The postmortem is they're looking at every bird. And this comes out of a time when, like, disease was a big issue. And so the inspection itself is designed to identify, like, lesions or tumors or
birds that look bad.
That's
so
right.
This is for big scale processors. That's what this does.
That's right. However, in the conversation about food safety, we pretty quickly get to talking about microbial pathogens, because that's one of the major hazards we face today. You can just look at the headlines. But it's been said over and over again by experts that this kind of inspection really doesn't address that issue, because these are things that can't be seen with the naked eye. So
there's a false sense of security, really, that if we simply rely on, it was inspected, it must be safe, that's a false sense of security that really comes with that method of food safety. And then second to that, which is really a primary issue, the track record of conventionally inspected poultry is not perfect. There are recalls that happen fairly regularly. When you compare that to the track record of exempted poultry from an estimated thousands of farms over 47 years, there's not one recorded case of foodborne illness, which doesn't mean it hasn't happened. Anything can happen. But one would think if it was less safe, we would have more evidence of that. So comparing the two to make the food safety issue is a distraction. It's just not correct.
So there's not a safety issue happening with small producers, and specifically here in Indiana, not happening with the Hawkins family farm. Is that correct?
Correct. You know, I think one of the questions that's asked is, well, how can we know these were slaughtered under sanitary conditions? But that's in my opinion, the beauty of this form of scale-appropriate regulation, because the government is playing a role, a necessary role, but the consumers are playing a necessary role. Because the scale is limited, there is an opportunity for transparency, for real relationships, actually, between those of us who are producing the food and those who are eating it. And so the example that we present is that our butcher facility has a long window running along one wall, and people are welcome to come watch the process and to ask us questions. And I don't see that as being available at a larger scale, where that on-site inspection is more valuable.
So what is happening right now, and what should people be paying attention to?
Well, the bill has passed the House by a narrow margin with a lot of lively debate, which was encouraging to see, and has moved on to the Senate, where they will consider it. And then beyond that, it may end up in conference committee. So the legislature still has a lot of work to do. And so on our part, we are watching closely and doing our best to be available to tell our story, to let people know the vision that we have for Indiana agriculture. And it does seem to it's caught the interest of a lot of people in our state, people who are interested in eating this kind of food, at these farm-to-table restaurants. It's caught the interest of a large number of chefs that we have who are doing some really exciting work, making some really great food, and who are eager to feature the abundance of what we have here in Indiana.
Now, if people want some more information about the farm, where can they go for that?
We have information up on our website, HawkinsFamilyFarm.com. We have a whole page dedicated to this issue that we try to keep updated. So there's more information about how we slaughter the birds, why we do it the way we do, how the bill affects our farm. And then there's information also about the restaurants that are supporting us and actually offering our chicken, featuring our chicken in these dishes. It's a bit of a social media campaign with the hashtag #KeepChickenOnTheMenu. So you can search that and see all these really – it'll make you hungry – all these really great dishes that that our chefs are coming up with.
We've been talking with Jeff and Zach Hawkins of Hawkins Family Farm. For more information, go to HawkinsFamilyFarm.com or search online for #KeepChickenOnTheMenu. We've been talking here today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio about the intersection of the local food movement and the political process, and its effects on an Indiana farm as well as Indiana restaurants. A bill currently under consideration in the Indiana legislature would eliminate an exception that allows the Hawkins Family Farm in North Manchester, Indiana, to sell its pasture-raised chicken to Indiana restaurants. In an effort to support the farm and its small-scale processing, some Indiana restaurants are participating in a social media campaign identified with the hashtag #KeepChickenOnTheMenu. Chef Alan Sternberg, executive chef at Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis, explains why he's involved with the campaign and why he values locally raised product.
A lot of what we do starts with what comes in the back door. You know, good produce, good proteins. And there's a level of responsibility and sustainability that has to be there. Sourcing, say, chicken, because we're talking about chicken, from a farm that, you know, is producing, you know, hundreds of thousands of birds, and, you know, they're not living in great living quarters, and, you know, they don't have the ability to move around, doesn't create a better product. It creates a bigger product. It creates a product faster because they're being fed so much, and they're being fed a supplementary diet versus, you know, letting birds run around, be birds. It ultimately creates better flavor. The more an animal moves, the better the flavor.
So the commodity bird isn't necessarily the best one for you.
It's just kind of, you know, our preference here is to support farmers that put the same amount of care and love into their product that we try to do for every dish that we put out. You know, you can't do it on a huge scale. It's not possible because it becomes an assembly line, basically. You know, instead of putting out a car, you're putting out chickens or you're putting out cows. I won't say there's a need for it, but I understand why it exists. You know, there's a lot of people in this country that need to eat, and I understand all that. It's just not something that I personally like to align myself with.
So the small farm is an extension of your philosophy.
So my food philosophy is to make good food, pretty simple, really. And part of that is getting the best product I can get. A lot of that is, you know, again, the sustainability of it and what kind of impact am I putting on my producers as far as, you know, are they taking care of their land? Are they taking care of the animal? Is it good? And a lot of that all kind of goes hand in hand. So, you know, I try to buy from farmers, produce farmers that, you know, that will grow cover crops and reintroduce nitrogen and carbon back into the soil. That way the land is fertile for a long time. And the same with, you know, like we buy from Tyner Pond, and they do a circular farming where they have the cows go through and graze on different patches. And then they have chickens come through and aerate the ground after that, you know, a couple of days later. So it's just kind of this healthy ecosystem. And the restaurant kind of works the same way. It's this ecosystem of, you know, something comes in, we have to use all of it, and we have to be sustainable. And it's just philosophies that really align with what we do.
I think maybe consumers aren't as aware of the restaurant as part of that chain, you know, that is looking for better options, more sustainable options.
Someone at home is not going to buy 100 pounds of, you know, lamb, you know, in a given week. Restaurants can do that. You know, they can buy, you know, 50 pounds of chickens, and they have the ability to use the whole thing. So I'm a huge fan and proponent of smaller food ways, from, you know, cutting out more middlemen in the food system, creating a healthier ecosystem for the animals and the land, you know, creating the opportunity to eat dense food. So it goes back to supporting small farms. You know, I get to deal with them directly. I get to call them. I get to talk to them. You know, I'm not dealing with, you know, some larger company that's, you know, got it in storage, who bought it from a slaughter place, that, you know, bought it from these farmers that they have. And it's the same as, you know, when you go to a small local grocer that's buying local produce. It's just cutting out a lot of middlemen.
We've been talking with Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis. For more information on that restaurant, go to ceruleanrestaurant.com. For more on the Keep Chicken on the Menu campaign, go to HawkinsFamilyFarm.com. Focusing today here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on House Bill 1267, currently under consideration in the Indiana legislature, a bill that, as now written, would eliminate an exception that allows a small Indiana poultry processor to sell its chickens to restaurants. For some perspective on the legislative discussion about the Hawkins family farm, we talked to Greg Gunthorpe, whose pasture-raised meats and poultry from Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange, Indiana, have become well-known in the Midwest, especially among chefs and restaurants. I caught up with Greg over a cup of coffee as he was headed back to LaGrange after meeting with the Lieutenant Governor and other farmers about the issue facing the Hawkins family farm. Although Gunthorpe Farms now has its own USDA-inspected processing facility, Greg tells us how he began with an exemption as well.
We started out as exempt poultry processors on the farm. It was probably back in 1998 or so. We did that for about 3 years, and then we got a full state inspection. We had state inspection on the farm for 3 years, and then we've had USDA inspection on the farm. It'll be 11 years here in March. I'm convinced that the exemption allows somebody to get into the poultry processing much easier. And the lack of poultry processing options is a real significant problem for small poultry farmers.
What does this processing exemption do, and how did it help you when you were starting?
Processing is a very complex business. And the processing exemption makes it a little bit simpler. You don't have an inspector there every single day. much more scale appropriate for, you know, when you're either processing less than 1,000 birds per year or less than 20,000 birds per year. To go from exempt to an inspected operation, even though they tell you that it's the exact same facility, which it is, you know, it's the biggest hurdle there is the addition of an awful lot more paperwork. You know, we had to put a HACCP plan and a standard sanitation operating procedure in place. We probably have somewhere between 2,500 and 10,000 hours per year of regulatory compliance compared to an exempt operation now as a USDA inspected operation. And, you know, we do about 3,000 chickens a week, so it's you know, it's justified for us, but to put that number of hours against 4,000 chickens a year, that would be a barrier to getting in the processing business that no one could substantiate.
If that bill goes through and becomes law, it would present considerable barriers to that. So it's, you know, would certainly throw up barriers, you know, financially and time-wise and that sort of thing. So it would keep small farmers out, right?
Yes, it would definitely keep small farmers out of the processing end. It's, in my opinion, basically creates a monopoly in the poultry industry. It realistically makes it so that there is going to be virtually no new processing started. You know, in my opinion, the exemptions, very, very few operations will ever stay in the exemptions. You know, if they're successful, they're going to move through the exemption. They're going to process enough birds that they'll either end up being a state or USDA-inspected facility very quickly, just like in our situation.
What's been your experience in working with these regulations?
I think it takes a different mindset. I think the regulations can be both complicated and complex, difficult to deal with at times. In general, most of the inspectors are very reasonable to deal with. But, you know, they have a job to do. We have a job to do. It's a completely different dynamic, though, when you get three of inspectors a day compared to getting two visits by an inspector a year, though.
Right, and that's where you are at. So you are at, you know, a way different level.
Yes, we're at a way different level. And, you know, to some extent, I think the level of inspection on us versus Hawkins is justified. You know, an awful lot of our product now goes to customers that, yes, they know who Gunthorpe Farms is, but they don't know me. You know, Hawkins sells to a handful of restaurants and to people that come out to the farm. You know, there's different levels of accountability in product as you increase in scale. You know, a person goes to the grocery store, they don't even have the slightest idea where the product came from, what country it was produced in, how it was produced, or anything. You know, they buy product from us, they know what we stand for. They buy product from Hawkins, in all likelihood, they've been out to the farm to pick the stuff up.
We've been talking with Farmer Greg Gunthorpe of Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange, Indiana. We'll be back with more from Greg here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. As I've mentioned a lot here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio today, politics is part of the local food movement. Growing the movement and promoting sustainable agriculture in Indiana requires voices. It requires farmers like Greg Gunthorpe of Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange, Indiana, to speak up and speak for the small farmer. Greg, whose meats and poultry are on the menus at restaurants in Chicago, Indianapolis, and around the Midwest, and who has been called a rock star farmer, tells us how he got involved in advocating for sustainable agriculture and why he's optimistic about its future.
I'm involved with this because we have a pasture-based livestock operation in Northeast Indiana. But my bigger issue is that I'm involved in what we do because I personally believe that the food supply needs some changes. Been very involved in rural advocacy work, served on Secretary of Agriculture Glickman and President Clinton's Small Farm Commission way back in the 90s. Been involved in rural advocacy work, sustainable agriculture work ever since then. And my opinion is that I think people need the opportunity and the choice to be able to buy poultry in Indiana from small, sustainable pasture livestock operations. And if this bill had passed, I think it's one of the largest barriers to entry to new processing and therefore to options for people to buy the kind of poultry produced in the manner that they want it raised.
So this is a significant thing. It's not just an esoteric law, although right now it just applies to the Hawkins farm, but it could have much bigger implications.
The pastured poultry industry in the United States is really in its infancy. And if you watch food trends, I'm convinced that you see they happen first in Europe, they happen on our coast, they come to the big cities in the Midwest, and then they finally come to rural Midwest. Pastured poultry, sustainable livestock has been very, very trendy in Europe. Obviously, it's trendy on our coast. You know, we can see the demand for it in the big cities here. It's finally coming to rural America. And the, like I said, the pasture poultry industry is really in its infancy. We have a whole processing industry to rebuild in order for there to be pastured poultry producers in Indiana. There, you take the whole United States, there's 200 USDA-inspected slaughter plants in the whole United States. That includes the Tysons, that includes me. There is almost no poultry processing infrastructure in the United States, virtually none for small producers. This bill right here pretty much ensures that almost no one is going to get into the poultry processing business on a small scale.
So it would eliminate the progress that small producers have been making, the inroads that they've been making in becoming more a part of the food chain. It just seems like it would be a big step backwards in where we're going, you know, as far as more support of local food.
I think what you'll end up seeing is, you know, you'll have the you have some poultry producers that operate under the 1,000 bird or less exemption that sell off from the farm. Some of those are successful, like it, want to take the thing to the next level. So they go to the 20,000 bird exemption. There'll be some of those that, you know, they're successful, people like their product. They're either going to become state inspected or they're going to become, you know, USDA inspected. It's, you know, like I said, the industry's in its infancy, and you can see how eventually we could rebuild it in Indiana. And if we make sure that bills like this don't happen, there's a chance of us having a good local sustainable agriculture in Indiana.
Now tell me why being able to sell to restaurants is important, because you do quite a bit of that.
Yeah, large portion of our business is food service, and I think I think one of the biggest things in strengths in selling to restaurants is I think that it gives a farm some brand recognition and some credibility. You know, if chefs like the product, plus they give you input and feedback on what you could do on the product, you know, it makes a product, makes it easier to move into retail if you're selling to some of the nicer restaurants in the area.
Are you optimistic that this bill can be revised, amended, something to make it more supportive of the small producer?
After today, I hope I'm not naive, but I think I'm very optimistic that I think that we're going to end up with some legislation that's supportive of the smallest poultry processors in the state.
Tell me why you're optimistic. Tell me, you know, if you can, you know, explain a little bit about what you have been trying to do to, you know, help change this bill.
I think that, you know, when everyone comes to the table, I think the two big issues are that you need consumer safety, and you need it in a manner to the point that there's still scale-appropriate regulations that aren't overly burdensome on the smallest of producers. You know, if you look at whatever industry and whatever bureaucratic agency, there's always exemptions for the littlest of them. It doesn't matter whether you're driving a semi up and down the road. You know, they have weight exemptions for that. Farmers get all kinds of exemptions for everything imaginable. You know, workman's compensation based on the number of employees, unemployment based on the number of employees. So, I mean, the you know, but when it comes to food safety, we still have to be, you know, you have to be serious about food safety. But realistically, this was never an issue of food safety. So, you know, going forward, it looks very plausible that, you know, the state might come up with some kind of certification program. So the same as what they have in the restaurants where somebody has to be ServSafe certified, could have a certification program for the exempt processors, as well as some basic microbial testing, the same as like what we would have to do in an inspected facility to ensure that consumers are having the best possible chance of making sure they're getting a safe and wholesome product.
Tell me just a little bit about, you know, your background in this sort of thing, in regulation and in studying regulations, and in possibly changing regulations.
I've been involved on this front for a while. The me and my family, we do a little bit of work with the Niche Meat Processors Assistance Network. I do some consulting across the country on some new facilities that people are putting in, look at their designs, see for product flow, people flow, that kind of things. Also have the opportunity to serve on a Pew Charitable Trust and the Meridian Group have a working dialogue that is looking at a rewrite on the Meat and Poultry Inspection Act. Involved in that in Washington, D.C., with the vice presidents of Cargill, Hormel, Kroger, McDonald's. Very interesting process. Been involved with Food and Water Watch, Consumer Union, Pew Charitable Trust, both the national and the international level on poultry processing issues. That was one of the things I found very interesting about this bill is that, you know, as you look across the globe, there's parts of the world that is becoming very progressive at looking at food safety issues in poultry. And here, Indiana was looked like we were looking at it from a 100-year-old perspective.
How do you get involved in this? How does one thing lead to another so that you become someone who sits on these committees and who presents testimony?
I'm very convinced that the world is a really, really small place, and especially when you start talking about USDA-inspected poultry processing, the world is a really, really small place. And then I'm also convinced, and I think this bill proves it, lots of people go through life without ever actually picking up and reading what they're actually involved in, you know, whether that be a legislator, whether that be a person involved in their industry. You know, most people don't even know what the actual regulations are for what they're involved in. I personally have read all of the Meat and Poultry Act, read the regulations, have a fairly photographic memory. I could probably recite virtually all of the meat and poultry regulations, if it not at least paraphrase all of them, and how those relate to the directives and the notices. So it's, I don't know, it's just one of those things that I kind of like to keep up on. So I've been fairly involved in the sustainable ag movement and, you know, and spoke at a lot of different conferences across the country and had the opportunity to run into some really interesting people who had some really interesting conversations. And before you know it, when you start talking about animal welfare and salmonella and campylobacter and chickens and issues like that, it's not a conversation that most people want to have intelligently for very long. And you start doing that, and before you know it, you get asked to go here and go there and present testimony in Europe, and, you know.
You have been called one of our rock star farmers. You know, is that a title that you're comfortable with at all?
No. No, you know, I grew up, and my mom always still has to tell me that. And, you know, I've had some really, really unique opportunities, met some really, really interesting people, met some really, really nice people. And I'm convinced that, whether a person is well known or not well known, you know, good people are good people. And, you know, I know some, you know, like, for example, I get to roast a pig each year for the Chicago Cubs. Those guys, really good, excellent group of young ball players. If you'd meet them on the street and didn't know that they were played baseball at Wrigley Field, you'd just think they were just down-to-earth normal people, you know. And so me, I'm convinced I'm still just a pig farmer. It's just I don't consider myself any kind of thing special. So.
Are you optimistic about farming, about sustainable ag? Is the future bright for it?
I think the opportunities in agriculture right now are huge. I'm one of the proudest people on the planet in being able to say that we farm about 250 acres. Probably never been a time in agricultural history in the United States where 250 acres and a dad could say that he's got three kids and each and every one of them could come back and farm. You know, it's exciting. My oldest daughter is a senior at Purdue studying agribusiness management with a focus in food marketing. She's coming back to the farm. My son's graduated from high school. He's already works full-time on the farm, a great addition to the operation. My youngest daughter, she's a freshman in high school. She says she's not coming back, but she's still got a few years to change her mind.
We've been talking with Greg Gunthorpe of Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange, Indiana. For more about Greg and his work, go to GunthorpeFarms.com. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in to the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Jeff and Zach Hawkins of the Hawkins Family Farm in North Manchester, Indiana, Alan Sternberg, executive chef at Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis, and Greg Gunthorpe of Gunthorpe Farms in LaGrange. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.